Okay, good morning. Today's daf in Sukkah is Lamed Beis. We're here in the third parak of the Masechta. We're going through the Dalaminim. And we started with Lulav, and we're going to continue with Lulav. Mirza Hashem, today we're going to conclude the Gemara's discussion regarding Lulav. As you can imagine, the halachas of the Psulim regarding the Dalaminim are extensive. And over here, as we go through the Gemara, we're going to have some rudimentary understanding of the various psulim, but it's just rudimentary, and obviously you need somebody who is extraordinarily knowledgeable in all these areas, and we are just going to become somewhat more educated, slightly more informed by going through the Gemara here in a Daf Yomi format. But obviously there's a lot to cover in all of these. So okay, but good. You have to start somewhere. So this is a good place to start. So yesterday we just finished up the Gemara's discussion. We are on Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. We're towards the bottom of the Amud, four lines down from the bottom. Actually, two lines down from the bottom. We're going to start Nikdam Rosho. Just want to make one comment from yesterday. All right. So yesterday, the Gemara tackled what seems to be a stira between the Mishnah and a comment made by Rava. So the Mishnah said that if you have the lulav shel asher, it's no good, and you have to destroy it, you have to burn it, since it's only l'sreifa. So therefore, we're going to view it right now as if it's already kasaruf, and therefore it does not have the requisite shear, and therefore it's no good. That's our Mishnah. And meanwhile, Rav said that if you have a lulav shel avodah zarah, so that's fine. Now when I say it's fine, by the way, lichatchila, you're certainly not allowed to use it, right? To use an avodah zarah item as a mitzvah, that's most. It's something which is just so inappropriate. But b'di'evet, it's not ideal, but b'di'evet, if I use it, so Rav said, you're gonna be yotzi your mitzvah. Now, of course, something that belongs to avodah zarah, you're not allowed to get hana from it, but as Rashi points out over here, you're not getting hana from it, meaning you're using it for a mitzvah, and mitzvah's lav lahenas nitnu, meaning something that's asur b'hana, you could use it for a mitzvah, you're not benefiting from it. Now, when I say you're not benefiting from it, I know we went over this yesterday, but it's just, I want to clarify one point that I wasn't particularly clear about yesterday, so good. So it'll give me the opportunity. So when you're doing a mitzvah, so the way Rashi describes it, so I'm serving a Kadosh Baruch Hu, but it's not a personal hana. Yes, when we're talking about schar va'onesh, so there's going to be a tremendous amount of reward that's stored up for olam haba. Okay, that part's true, but it's not when we're talking about isuri hana, we're talking about that you're not allowed to get tangible benefit in this world. And so doing a mitzvah is not considered a tangible benefit. Good. That's what we saw yesterday. So the Gemara says is that when we were talking about the Mishnah and the Asher, which is no good, that's Asher Demosha. But when Rava was talking about a Lulav Shel Avodah Zarah, he wasn't talking about Asher Demosha. So yesterday I started, but I didn't really clarify too well. What exactly does it mean, Asher Demosha? Right? So when they went into Eretz Yisrael, so there were a bunch of Asher trees over there. And those are Asher trees, so they need to be burnt. Mashenke and Avodah Zarah in general. So Avodah Zarah in general, so it can be dealt with. It's not clear in the Gemara, and quite frankly, nor even in Rashi, exactly what the distinction is. Right? Rashi just simply says, Rashi quotes from Parshas Re, which we just happened to have read yesterday in Shul. So Rashi quotes in Parshas Re, Vashrehem tisrefun ba'ish. So that when it comes to Nasher, you have to burn it. And we know that the lulav requires a shear. And so since this needs to be burnt, so therefore it does not have the requisite shear. What about lulav shel avodah zarah? Like, doesn't it need to be destroyed? So the same argument remade regarding the asher, so shouldn't it be true by lulav as well? So this is the part that I left unclarified yesterday. So just quickly, just to tackle this. So some suggest within Rashi, it's difficult. It's difficult to really see the difference. So some make the suggestion within Rashi that the asher that we're describing over here, the asherah demosha that the Gemara is describing, is the asherah that when we go into Eretz Yisrael, so we acquired the asherah. Meaning, remember, when we go into Eretz Yisrael, so what are we doing? We're doing kibush. We're conquering. And therefore, we're creating an acquisition. So that means that those asherah trees end up becoming our asherah trees. Therefore, what? So we know the halacha in Avodah Zarah is that Avodah Zarah that was owned by a Jew, you can't be mevatalit. So since you can't be mevatalit, so therefore there's only one conclusion with these asheras, and that is that you have to burn them. Masha Enkin, if we're talking about an Avodah Zarah that's owned by a guy, so an Avodah Zarah owned by a guy, so he could be mevatalit. Since he could be mevatalit, so therefore it could lose its Avodah Zarah status, even though you didn't burn it. Okay. That's a distinction to be made. That could be the pshat within Rashi. Again, Rashi doesn't say all that, but that could very well be the pshat within Rashi. Of course, it really if this is a correct pshat, it becomes difficult because if we're talking about a lulav that belongs to a guy, so on the first day, it's not yours. And you can't be yotze with it on the first day. On the first day, you need it to be yours. So then the whole discussion over here is not talking about the first day. It's talking about all subsequent days. Okay, so as you can see, it gets complicated, meaning to try to articulate the difference between the Asherah de Moshe, which is what our Mishnah is describing about, and Stam Avodah Zarah that Rav is describing about. So clearly there is a distinction. It's just a question of how to explain the distinction. That becomes a bit of a challenge. And good, I just did a little bit of a better job today than I did yesterday. Anyway, we continue. We're on Lamed Alpha Medbez. We are two lines from the bottom, Niktam Rosho. And now the specifics. We're going to talk about now what exactly will disqualify a lulav so that it can't be used. Presumably, all these disqualifications are hovering around the idea that the lulav is no longer beautiful. Now, I know that what I just said is debatable, because it could be that some of these psulim are going to be a function of some other psul, i.e. maybe it's chaser, maybe it's deficient, it's missing. So the truth of the matter is that it's that requires its own analysis and its own investigation, exactly why all these particular disqualifications, which we're going to outline, are in fact going to be disqualifying the lulav. But meanwhile, we get to do just a cursory look at the various disqualifications, Niktam Rosho. So the Mishnah said that if the top of the lulav is clipped off. Now, Amar Rav Huna Loshanu Ela Niktam. So yeah, if the top of the lulav is clipped off, so then the lulav is no good. So aval nizdak, but if let's say the tips of the lulav are just separating, they're split, so kasher. So the Gemara says b'shem Rav Huna that is split on the top of the lulav is fine. But nizdak kasher, the Gemara says, are you right about that? Is that correct? V'atanya, but we learned in the following brisa, lulav kafuf, if the lulav is hunched over, or kavutz, or if the lulav is is thorny, and you have thorns protruding out of the lulav, saduk, if it's split, akum, doma lemagal, or if it's bent like a sickle, so puzzle. In all these cases, it's going to be puzzle. Now, we just quoted a brisa. Now, incorporated in this list of brisa that things are disqualified is going to be the split lulav. So, obviously, Rav Huna now is going against the brisa. In a moment, we're gonna address that, but let's just first finish the brisa. Charos pasul, dama lecharos kasher. So if it is really hard, wood hard, so it's gonna be pasul. But if it's dama lecharos, if it's not totally hard, so then kasher, then it's gonna be kasher. That ad kan divrei habrisa. Anyway, what comes out now is that the brisa says that a split lulav is going to be disqualified. Unlike what Rav Huna said, Rav Huna said that a split lulav is gonna be kasher. So amra papa da avi kihimnik. So Rav Papa says, well, they're split and then they're split. In other words, it's going to be a bad pun, but I'm ready for it. So we're going to split the difference now between what Rav Huna said and what the Braisa said. So, and the way Rashi describes this is as follows. I'm going to read the Rashi, so skipping the French word, which I don't know what it means. So, Barzel Shol Sofrim, Shiesh Lo Shnei Roshim V'Rosho Echad Mifutzal. So there's some sort of tool used by the scribes. And basically this tool, this instrument, I don't know how to say in English, but basically what comes out over here is that by design, it is basically like split on the top. So, kach gada halulav kemin shtei shedraos, machatzis alav lakan, o machatzis alav lakan. And so when the brisa was describing the split tip, which is going to be no good, it basically gives off the impression that there's not one lulav over here, but it gives the impression that there are two lulavim over here. In other words, the split is such where it literally looks like it's got twin peaks coming off the top. So that's where the brisa says it's puzzle and it's no good. What Rav Huna was describing is that the top leaf on the lulav starts to split open a little bit. So under those circumstances, Rav Huna says it's going to be fine. Okay, so that is the distinction the Gemara makes between the statement of Rav Huna and that of the brisa. And so it comes out now that Rav Huna is not arguing with the brisa. You just have to understand the Bryce's understanding of Saduk versus Rav Huna's comment of Nizdak. And again, by the way, there's a lot of halachic literature over here in terms of when your lulav starts splitting. The Shulchan Aruch, the Mishnah Brura, there is much to discuss over here. Unfortunately, we're just simply not going to cover it all. We're not going to cover any of it. But when your lulav starts splitting, so it becomes a problem. But we now know that at a certain point in the split, it's fine, and another point in the split, it's not fine. And what you need is you need shimush, you need you need to, whatever. You need to be, so to say, in the business to be able to see the difference. And even when you're in the business, it's not so easy. Anyway, Akam Domalamagam. Okay, so we quoted the Braisa. So it gives the Gemara the opportunity to go over some of the other disqualifications mentioned in the Braisa. And so now we're talking about where the lulav is bent. It's domela magal, looks like a sickle. So Amar Avala Amar Nelofanav Avalacharav Briyasohu. So the Gemara says now, sometimes the bent lulav is fine and sometimes it's not fine. So if it bends on its spine, okay, now over here, if you happen to know exactly what a lulav looks like, it's going to be really helpful over here for me to describe the palm branch. And then a visual presentation would be much more helpful over here. Okay, so I don't have a lulav with me. So just if you can follow me. If it bends on its spine, so that's something where it bends backwards. In other words, if you can just imagine a person for a moment, right, being like a lulav, where obviously the vertebrae would be like the spine of the lulav. So if he bends backwards, so the right legs, like as if he's looking up. So that's fine. The Gemara describes this brioso. That is a natural bend in the lulav. And the Gemara says, and that's not possible. The psul of the ben lulav is where it bends forward, right? And again, like the person would be hunching forward. So that's no good. That's considered now a deviation from what the standard lulav looks like. And therefore, that's no good. So Amrav Nachman litzdadim kalafanav dami v'amri lakalach av dama, dami. Now the Gemara says, now what if the lulav is bending, not to the back, not to the front, but rather to the sides? So the Gemara over here has two versions in terms of whether it's kasher or pasul. And so as you can imagine, so therefore the halacha is going to be more machmir because the Gemara is unclear, unresolved in terms of a bend to the side, whether that's okay or not okay. So good. So what you'll see people do when they pick up their lulav is they take one side, put it right by their eye, and they look straight and they want to see if the barrel of the lulav is going to be straight or not straight. Good. So hopefully what they know is that a bend to the side is unacceptable, but a bend up, I guess it depends how you're holding the lulav, but if you're holding it shedra up, if the bend up would be fine, a bend down would be possible. Okay, good. That's what we just learned. Amarava hailulav adesalik b'chadhutza ba'amum hu possible. Gemara makes one more comment regarding the lulav, that of Rava, and that is that if the leaves are growing, b'chad hutza. I'm going to present the Gemara this morning like Rashi, right? That's what we do in the daf. But we should all know that Rashi is not the only pshat over here in the Gemara. But like Rashi says that if leaves are only growing on one side of the lulav, it's abnormal, I've never seen it. But if leaves are growing on one side of the lulav, so under those circumstances, that would be a gross deviation of what a lulav looks like, and therefore it's going to be puzzle. Okay. Presumably. Nifritzu alav. Now, the leaves are detached. Okay, the way Rashi described it, both back in the Mishnah and over here in our sugya as well, is that nifritzu alav is basically the leaves are totally detached, right? Not hanging on at all. And what you did is you wrap the leaves up against the branch. Rashi says like a broom, right? A broom is a great way to illustrate basically something that was detached and reattached by just simply tying it back on. So that is, that's nifritzu alav. The Mishnah, of course, said that nifritzu alav is going to be pasul. Amra papa nifritzu davi kichufya. So Rav Papa says that the nifritzu of our Mishnah is basically like a broom. Okay, he gives exactly that analogy. Rashi describes the broom as an escoba. Okay, the little French that I know, I don't know any French, but Spanish that I know, okay, that's a broom. So nifridu, the ifrud afrude. Now nifridu just simply means that the leaves are still attached, but they are starting to separate. By Rav Papa nechleka tiamas mahu. Now let's say there's a split in the tiamas. So this is a major discussion. And again, just for today, just for the daf, I'm going to present the Gemara like Rashi. But please know again that there are multiple ways to explain our Gemara over here, and I'm just presenting it like Rashi. Nechleka tiamas, says Rashi, is that the middle leaf. In other words, if you follow the leaves on the spine, so you get to the top of the spine, so there's going to be one leaf coming off the very top of the spine. Now, sometimes there are two, sometimes there are twin top leaves, but let's assume right now that there's one leaf that's going on the very top. Now, you should know in general that the leaves of the lulav are really folded over. And what you could do to any one of the leaves of a lulav is you could split into two. Now, obviously, for the mitzvah of lulav, we don't want them split into two. In fact, we all want them all whole. Nechlaka tiyamis, so we're talking about, the word tiyamis comes from the word ta'om, which means twin. And so there was a split in the twin leaves. The way Rashi describes it over here is that we're talking specifically about the top leaf of the lulav, and there is a split in that leaf. Now, we just started off this morning talking about nizdak. And in fact, we said that according to Rav Huna, nizdak is kosher. So what's nechlaka tiyamis? So Rashi says that the leaf is split to the point where it's split all the way to its base, meaning it's coming out of the spine of the lulav. And so it's split all the way down to the base. In fact, not only is it split down to the base, says Rashi, it's even split, even the actual trunk of the lulav, the spine of the lulav, is also split a little bit, all the way to the leaf that's immediately below it. So that is an entire split of the top leaf, even down into the spine. So nechlaka tiyamis mahu, what would be the halach over there? Tashma de Amar Rebbe Yochanan Amar Rebbe Yeshua ben Levi nitla tiyamis pasal. Well, if the tiyamis is removed, it's going to be pasal. And the Gemara says, my love, who had the nechlaka? So the Gemara says, okay, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make the following jump. If I know that the tiyamis which is missing, in other words, if it's removed, it's going to be pasal. So presumably, nechlaka would be the same halacha. The Gemara says, lo, nitla shani. So the Gemara says, I don't know if that's a valid assumption. In fact, just the opposite. One could say that when the Braisa says that when the tiyamis is removed, so that mamish now is chaser. It's missing a leaf, and not just a leaf, but its principal leaf, meaning its top leaf. But if it's just split, maybe you can argue that that's different, meaning it's not chaser, it's not missing, it's not lacking. It's there, it just happens to be split. Okay, so the diuk from the Braisa can really go in either direction. Now, in a variant statement of Rav Yochanan in the name of Yeshua ben Levi, so he says that the splitting of the tiyamis is just like the removal of the tiyamis, and therefore it's going to be pasul. So over here, a very clear statement regarding that if your tiyamis is split all the way down to its spine. So under those circumstances, the lulav is in fact going to be pasul. Okay, what I just did is I explained the Gemara as per Rashi, and again, it's not the only way to explain the Gemara, and so therefore, as far as practical halacha is concerned, so you need to know the other explanations of the Gemara, you need to know the Shulchan Aruch. Again, we are not even scratching the surface of the Gemara over here, just these are really basics. Rav Yehuda Amar Tanya, we learned in the Brice, Rav Yehuda Amar Mishum Rabbi Tarfon Kapos Tamarim Kapos Imaya Parud Yechavtenu. Again, we're talking about the palm frond over here. If the leaves start separating, so what you need to do is you need to tie it up. You need to wind it back up again. So Amalei Ravina Rav Ashi Mimai Dehai Kapos Tamarim Delulavahu Ema Charusa. So the Gemara now wants to know, how do I know that when we're talking about the palm frond, we're talking about where the leaves are only beginning to separate. Maybe it's Charusa. Now, the way Rashi describes Charusa over here is that we're talking about the palm frond where not only have the leaves spread out, but it's become so hard and so brittle that there's no way to get those leaves back again. Maybe we're talking about a branch. Maybe that's what the Torah is describing. So the Gemara says, no, Beina Kapos Valeika. So the Gemara says, no, it can't be talking about that because the Torah says that you have to wind it up. Meaning if we're talking about where the leaves are spread out and it's so brittle and there's no way to get it back again, the Gemara says it can't be it can't be what we're describing. It has to be something which is where the leaves could be brought back to its center, and that's why it has to be the lulav, not the charusa. Ve'ema ufta. So the Gemara says, okay, maybe what the Gemara is describing over here is that we're talking about the trunk of the palm tree, or if you will, the heart of the palm tree. In other words, it's no branches, but we're actually talking about some sort of trunk where, right, let's imagine it's a little bit on the thinner side, right? Most of the palm trees around here are just way too thick to even imagine that you're supposed to pick it up and use it as the dalmina, but we're talking about a particularly thin tree with a particularly thin trunk, but maybe it's just a trunk. And that's what the Gemara is suggesting right now. That's the ufta. So the Gemara says, no, kapos mechlal, de'ika parun, v'hai kafos v'omei la'olam. So the Gemara says it can't be. Meaning by virtue of the fact that the Torah says that it has to be wound up, it has to be bound up. We're talking about a branch. We're talking about a branch with leaves. We're not talking about the trunk over here. So the Gemara rejects that as well. The Ema Kufra. So the Gemara says, okay, but maybe It is another piece of the tree. Rashi describes the kufra is it's like charusa, which we described earlier, but instead of being, Rashi described the charusa being 3 or 4 years old, where it's really hard and it's really brittle. So over here, the kufra, not yet as hard and as brittle. So Amar Abaye Darcheh Darcheinam V'chol Nesiv Oseh Shalom. So Abaye says, no, it can't be. Because, in other words, even though it's not as brittle as the charusa, but what do we have? We have leaves going in every direction. And what happens now? You're gonna be holding it. It's going to poke you. It's going to poke somebody else. Meaning that's not what the Torah wants. The Torah does not want this mitzvah to be painful. It doesn't want it to be dangerous. Right? The ways of the Torah are pleasant. And it can't possibly be the kufra. So Amalei Rava Tusfala Ravina Ve'ema Tarte Kape De Tamre. So the Gemara says, okay, maybe what the Torah wants us to bring is a cluster of dates. Meaning, again, let's think about where we're starting from. The pasuk in the Torah that tells us to bring dalaminim. The Torah describes that you have to bring kapos tamarim. So what is kapos tamarim? So we know tamar is a date. And so maybe kapos tamarim does not mean the palm of the date tree, but maybe it means actually a cluster of dates. So the Gemara says, nah. Ve'ema tarte kapi de tamre. So kapas ksiv. So the Gemara says, look, we're going to pronounce it kapos because that's a mesora, but in terms of the way that it's actually written, it's written chaser, without a vav. And so that means singular. So in other words, it can't be a cluster of dates. So ve'ema chada. So the Gemara says, okay, so maybe one date? Maybe, and look, and the idea that we're bringing, that one of the minim is a fruit, I got news for you, right? The esrog is a fruit. So maybe the expectation of the Torah is to just simply bring a date. So the Gemara says, no. So the Gemara says, no, it's not a single date because for that, the Torah would have used the word kaf. Okay. And so the Torah doesn't use it. The Torah uses the word kapos. So that's how we know that it's a branch of the lulav. It's not going to be the brittle, right, mature branch. It's not going to be even the open branch, which is not as brittle. It's not going to be the trunk of the tree. It's not going to be the dates. It's not going to be a single date. In other words, it is a young, just emerging branch of the palm tree. Okay, what the Gemara just did now for the last 10 lines is it at least entertained for, you know, in Daf Yomi terminology, 5 minutes. Right? 10 lines of Gemara entertain that maybe the Kapos Tamarim has some sort of different meaning in terms of what we should be taking. To what degree was the Gemara's entertainment over here like a serious entertainment of another min? Right? This is going to be a common question that we're going to be asking over the next number of days of the Gemara. Where the Gemara over here entertains that maybe it's some other species. By the Esrog, we're going to hear a lot of this, where the Torah doesn't give us a clear identification of what it is. The Torah just simply says, Priyetz Hadar, beautiful fruit. Okay, what do we know what a beautiful fruit is? Okay, so we have a Mesorah, that's how we know. So, but when the Gemara entertains other possibilities, so to what degree is the Gemara like seriously entertaining it? Or perhaps what the Gemara is doing over here is that the Gemara, not for a moment, not for a second. And by the way, this approach, I don't have the Rambam in front of me, but this approach is really the path the Rambam takes down. Not for a single moment did the Gemara think that the Kapos Tamarim is going to be anything else. And the same thing is true regarding the Esrog, as we're going to see later on in our Perek. It's not, we know what it is. We have the Mesorah, and we know what it is. It's just that what the Gemara enjoys doing is that the Gemara enjoys seeing it in the Pasuk. Meaning, what in the Pasuk tells us most definitively that it is what we know that it is. And the Gemara is not really entertaining other possibilities of what it could possibly be. It just happens to be that we want to see it in the pasuk. But the Mesorah is the Mesorah. Okay. That's the Rambam's approach, and that is the, a range of position over there in terms of how seriously was the Gemara entertaining other possibilities. Tzine Har Barzok Shera. We're doing the next line of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that if I have a lulav that is described as Tzine Har Barzel, so that in fact would be acceptable. So I'm Rabbi Loshana Elisha Rosh Hashanah Magila Tzadikar Shoseh. Ava in Rosh Hashanah Magila Tzadikar Shoseh Pasol. So the Gemara says, now when we're talking about Tzine Har Barzel, so let's try to clarify. What are we describing? So we're describing where the leaves are really short. Okay, now, it's going to be a little bit hard for us to imagine, to envision, because the leaves of our lulav are particularly long. And one well overlaps the other one. Sini har barzel, the leaves are so short that the end of one leaf, the tip of one leaf, doesn't even make it to the base of the next leaf. It's really hard to imagine. But anyway, so if the tip of one leaf doesn't make it to the base of the next of the above leaf, so that's no good. However, as long as the tip of one, the top of one, made it to the base of the other, so that would be acceptable. And that's what our Mishnah is describing. That's Tzinei Har Barzel, that's in fact Kasher. Tanya Mihachi, the Gemara quotes the Braisa that supports this very idea. Tzinei Har Barzel Psula. So the Braisa says that Tzinei Har Barzel will love him or no good. And V'hanan Tanan Kshera. Meanwhile, our Mishnah says it's fine. Elish Mamina Ka Abayish Mamina. So the Gemara says, okay, and what does that show us? What does that indicate? That obviously Abaye's distinction has got to be a great distinction, because that clearly makes the difference between the Mishnah and the Braisa. Ika deramile mirmas. Now we're on the top of Laman Beis and Beis. So some presented as a stira. So Tanami learned in the Mishnah. Sinei har barzel kasher v'atanya psula. So good. So one Braisa says kasher, the other Braisa says puzzle. So amar bar lo kasher kanche rosh shozeh magil atzad ikar shozeh kanche in rosh shozeh magil atzad ikar shozeh. Good. And now to be miyashiv the stira. So we use a Abaye's distinction. Okay, beautiful. Amar of Miryon, Amar of Yeshua ben Levi, Amar la Tani Rabba Bar Mari, Mishum Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, Shtei Tamaros Yesh Begei Ben Hinnom. So there are two date trees found in the valley of Ben Hinnom. Rashi says that it is proximate to Yerushalayim. All right. In fact, if you take a tour of Yerushalayim, so there's a valley, right? I went to go visit it, but so many years ago. Okay, but anyway, so the valley of Ben Hinnom, the Ola Ashan Me Beneim. Now over here, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai says that if you look carefully, tucked away between these two palm trees planted in the Gei Ben Hinnom, so you're going to find a smoke coming out between the two palm trees. Vizeu Shashanin Utsinei Har Barzel Kisheros, and that's where you're going to find the Tzinei Har Barzel. Vizuhi Pischa Shal Gehenim, and oh, by the way, it happens to be the entrance to Gehenim. Okay. Now, that's about as much as I can help you in terms of understanding, explaining the Gemara over here, what he's coming to add over here, and the idea that there's an actual entrance to Gehenna found in this world. Okay, these are topics that are well beyond my pay grade and my understanding. But anyway, the Gemara has a Masorah in terms of where to find these Sinei Har Barzel Lulavim, and the Gemara just shared it with us. Lula Sheisha Bo Shloshet Tfachim. Okay. And for the remainder of today's daf, we talk about the shear of the lulav. So what exactly is the shear of the lulav? So you read the Mishnah, so you get the impression that the shear of the lulav has to be three tefachim. So it sounds easy. It's not that particularly easy. It's not that particularly hard, but it's going to require a little bit of mathematics this morning. So I'm Rav Yehuda Mashmol, shear hadas v'arav v'shlosha. So as far as the shear of the hadas and lulav, it's going to be three tefachim. And then lulav arba'ah. And then the shear of the lulav is going to be four tefachim. Kedei she'e lulav yosei min hadas tefach. So that the lulav is going to be higher than the hadas and the arava by one tefach. V'rabbi parnach amar Rav Yochanan she'ezer shulav sarach she'e min hadas tefach. Now, in another version, Rav Parnach quotes Rabbi Yochanan as saying that the shedra of the lulav has to exceed that of the hadas by one tefach. So that means that when measuring... Now, what we now know is the four tefachim of the lulav. So it's a question in terms of what we're measuring. So according to the first version, that's Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. So we're measuring the entire lulav from the base, wherever you clipped it, from the base to the tip of the leaf. And that has to be four tefachim. According to the second version of the Gemara, not version, but according to Rabbi Yochanan. So no, the four tefachim have to be from wherever you clipped it to the top of the spine. In other words, and the leaves don't count toward this measurement of four tefachim. Okay. How much is a tefach? So the tefach is approximately, your fist, the width of a fist, but obviously that of an average person. And there is a major discussion and debate amongst the contemporary, postgame, more contemporary postgame, in terms of what we're talking about. Anywhere within a range of 3 to 4 inches, something within that range. Even if you're going to be assuming the larger 4 inches, so we're talking now about the lulav having to be 4 times 4 inches. So it has to be 16 inches. Now those 16 inches, according to Rav Yochanan, have to be from wherever you clip the bottom to the top of the spine. Okay, right. The most love him far exceed this minimum measurement that we just described over here. But again, it's important to know what the minimum measurement is. So, okay, Tanan. Continuing now in the Gemara. So the Gemara continues as follows. The Tanan. Lulav sheish bo gimel tefachim kedei lananei bo kasher. So how does all this work with the Mishnah? Meaning the Mishnah says seemingly very clearly that the lulav has to be 3 tefachim. And now everyone's assuming it's 4 tefachim, and the only question over here is how to measure that fourth tefach up to the tip of the leaves, up to the tip of the shedra. But where are we getting 4 from? And how are you reading that in the Mishnah? So the Gemara says, Ema u kedei lananei bo kasher. So the Gemara says, no, I'll tell you how you read the Mishnah. You read the Mishnah of when the Mishnah says 3 tefachim, kedei lananei bo, you got to stick in a vav. U kedei lananei bo. Meaning what the Mishnah is telling us is that additional tefach of the lulav, where it is higher than the hadas on the rava by 1 tefach, is for the purpose of nanuin. Meaning that when you shake the lulav, so what's prominent amongst the dalaminim is going to be the lulav. And notably, when you shake it, so you're going to see that most manifest by the top of the lulav. So the kedela naneabo is actually telling us that we have to add another tefach, so it really pronounces the nanuin when we shake the lulav. Now, markadisle. Now, in terms of that extra tefach, so is it up to the spine or up to the tip of the leaf? So the Gemara says, okay, whichever position you follow. Meaning the Gemara presented 2 positions, Rav Yehuda Mishmuel versus Rav Yochanan. However you go in terms of that particular detail, but it's got to be an extra tefach. That's how you read the Mishnah. Tashma, shir hadas v'arav, v'shosha v'lulav arba. So the shir of the hadas and the arav is going to be 3, and the lulav is going to be 4. So my love behadei alin. So the Gemara says now, presumably we're talking about with the leaves, meaning just like by the hadas and the rava, we are presuming that it's a measurement including the leaves. So maybe by the lulav, it's also a measurement including the leaves as well. And the Gemara says, lo, lavar me'alin. No, that's not necessarily how to understand. It could be that by the lulav, we're excluding the leaves. And that means that the measurement is only the spine, but not including the leaves. Okay. So the Gemara left us off with 2 different ways to measure the lulav, meaning we know that it's 4 tefachim, although in a moment we're gonna clarify, we don't even know it's exactly 4 tefachim. You'll see what I mean in just a moment. But right now we could say we know it's 4 tefachim, and now it's just a question of how to measure those 4 tefachim. Is that just measuring the spine, or is it measuring it with the leaves? Good. Gufa. Shir hadas v'arav v'shlosha v'lulav arba'a. Okay, so we're going to go back to the Braisa, and we only quoted the first part of the Braisa. We're re-quoting it, and that is that the measurement of both Hadas and Arav is 3 tefachim. The measurement of a lulav is 4 tefachim. Now, the Gemara says, now I'm confused. No, I'm sorry, not yet. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, now in the Braisa here gives us another opinion, and that's the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon. Ba'amas bas chamisha tefachim. An ama of 5 tefachim. Now, what did Rabbi Tarfon mean by that? This part is unclear. And what the Gemara now for a moment is going to entertain is that what Rabbi Tarfon is telling us is that when you're getting the Hadas and you're getting the Arava, it's not that it has to be 3 Tfachim, but rather it has to be 5 Tfachim. And that's what the Gemara thinks for a moment, and the Gemara really reacts to such a suggestion. I'm a Rava, Sharele Mari le Rabbi Tarfon. So Rava says, you know, Hashem should forgive Rabbi Tarfon. You should, right? Rabbi Tarfon gave us a shear that's difficult, to say the least, that he wants us to get hadasim and aravos that are 5 tefachim long. So hasha ava shlosh lo mishkachinam ba chamisha mebaye. Look, we really struggle to find a hadas where it's mishulash at 3 tefachim. Now, tomorrow? Yeah, I think tomorrow. Okay, tomorrow we start with the hadasim. Yeah, I don't think, I know. Tomorrow we start with the Hadassim. How about we say it clearly? It's easy to remember, by the way. Tomorrow's daf is Lamed Gimel. That's 33. So when you talk about the Hadassim, that's 3 by 3. Okay, good. So my mnemonic for today. But anyway, and today's daf is Lamed Beis. That's Lev. That's the Lulav. Okay, that's the Lev. Great. I got plenty of mnemonics for today. But anyway, when we're describing the Hadassim, so that means that the leaves have to be triplets. Okay, and we'll describe that in more detail tomorrow. But meanwhile, the Gemara says, we're struggling finding the Hadassim Mishulashim of 3 Tfachim. And now Rabbi Tarfon says that we got to find five tefachim. So that's wild. That can't be. It's just simply too much. So the ki asr Rav Dimi Amar. So the Gemara says, okay. So what we did is we did not understand Rabbi Tarfon correctly. And now what the Gemara is going to do is that the Gemara is going to give us two ways to understand Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon is not saying that I need five tefachim. What is Rabbi Tarfon saying? So the Gemara is going to give us two various pshatim in terms of how to understand Rabbi Tarfon. And we're going to have Rav Dimi give his version of what Rabbi Tarfon meant. And you know how this works, by the way. If Rav Dimi is giving us a version, so you know, right, in the batter's box, we're going to have Ravin giving us his version of what Rabbi Tarfon meant. Okay, so we'll start with Rav Dimi. Okay, and over here, just a little bit of math in order to appreciate and understand what's going on over here. So, here's what Rabbi Tarfon meant. Rabbi Tarfon meant, we're going to do the following. We're going to take a standard amma. Now, an amma is made up of six tefachim, okay? And what we're going to do now is that we're going to take this amma, and we're going to break it now into five parts. Okay. So now, each one of these five parts, obviously, is going to exceed a tefach, okay? By a six. So now what's going to end up happening? By a fifth. Okay. So now, once we do that, so you take this unit and you just simply make three of these units. Okay. So now, in terms of a linear measurement, how much are we doing now? So since each one of these now units exceeded a tefach by a fifth, so three of these units is going to be 3 3/5. So that is what Rabbi Tarfon meant. Rabbi Tarfon did not mean that you're going to be taking five tefachim. He just simply meant that you need 3 3/5. So that means to say that you're going to take three of these units for the hadas. 3 3/5 now is going to make up a hadas. And now, presumably, 4 4/5 for the lulav. So So the Gemara says, okay, so now the hadasim have to be how long according to Rabbi Tarfon? It's got to be 3 3/5. So kashi d'shmuel, d'shmuel. So the Gemara says, okay, but now that becomes difficult because now Shmuel is being so sir none other than Shmuel. Hacham Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Shir Hadas V'Arava Shlosha. Because remember a statement made by Shmuel that the shear of the Hadas on the Rav is going to be 3 tefachim. V'hasam Amar Rav Huna Amar Shmuel Alach Karebi Tarfon. And meanwhile, we have another statement said in the name of Shmuel that the halacha falls like Rabbi Tarfon. And that is, to say the least, confusing, because our current understanding of Rabbi Tarfon is that the linear measurement of the hadas and the rava has got to be 3 3/5. Meanwhile, Shmuel on a different statement said that the hadas and the rava only has to be 3 tefachim. Well, which one is right? And so the Gemara says, "Lo duck." So the Gemara says, "Well, I'll tell you what. When he said 3 tefachim, he was being imprecise. Really, the halacha is like Rabbi Tarfon that has to be 3 3/5. And when he said 3, he was just giving a ballpark." So the Gemara says that's unacceptable. So look, you want to give a ballpark number, you want to make it easier for people. I understand that. Wrong direction. Meaning over here, if the actual halacha demands that the hadas and the rava be 3 3/5, and he's just ballparking, he's just saying, oh, you know what, 3 is going to be good. No. If he said 4, that's great. Because if somebody comes close to 4, you'll probably have a kasher hadas and a rava. But if somebody's shooting for 3 and meanwhile you need 3 3/5, so you're being makel over here, and it could very well be that you don't have the requisite shear. So that's very hard to imagine. So this problem now has not been resolved. This steerer between Shmuel and Shmuel, where Shmuel says you only need 3 tefachim for your hadas and rava, and Shmuel also possibly like Rabbi Tarfon, and our current understanding of Rabbi Tarfon is that the requirement is to have 3 3/5. So we have not resolved the steerer between Shmuel. So the Gemara says, okay, so let's try this again now, round two. Now here in round two, what we're going to do is that we're going to reopen what Rabbi Tarfon meant. Ki asa Ravin Amar. So Ravin says, here's what we're going to do. What we're going to do is that we're going to actually go in another direction. And that is, Amma bas chamisha tefachim. So we're going to take an Amma of 5 tefachim. Okay, so in other words, an incomplete Amma. Now, there happens to be other areas in halacha where the Amma is actually going to be 5 tefachim, not 6 tefachim, in terms of the construction of the Mishkan. If you recall, right, we had a discussion regarding what exactly is going to be the unit measurement that we're going to use in terms of building the Mishkan and building the Beis HaMikdash. But, okay, right now we're not talking about the Mishkan, we're not talking about the Beis HaMikdash. We're talking about a lulav. So we're going to take an amma, but let's take the word amma and let's put it in quotes because it's not an amma. It's basically now going to be five tefachim. And what we're going to do now is that we're going to divide that into six parts. Okay? So take five tefachim and divide that into six parts. So now we've created a unit. And now what we're going to do is the following. And we're going to take three of those units, and that's the height that you need in order to get to a kasher hadas and a kasher arava. Okay? So, mathematically, it's simple, but it's even simpler when you just simply consider that what we're doing basically is that we're taking five tefachim and we're going to break that down into six parts and we only need three of those six parts, which means basically half. If you want to say it in other terms, half of five tefachim, which of course comes out to 2.5 tefachim. Ah, so ki asa rav and amar amar bas chamisha tefachim aseo so shisha. Okay, so v'kama havlu trei upalga. Good. So when you take five tefachim, divide that into six units, and demand three of those six units. So basically you're saying half of five, which is otherwise stated as 2.5. So the Gemara says, okay, so kashi d'shmol d'shmol. Okay, but now, great. So your hadas and your areva only need to be 2.5 tefachim tall. In now our understanding of Rabbi Tarfon. Now remember, Shmuel says the halacha is like Rabbi Tarfon. Now also remember that Shmuel says that the hadas and the rava need to be three. The Gemara says, but now we're good, meaning we're really comfortable now. So the Gemara says the kasha d'Shmuel d'Shmuel lo dak. So the Gemara says, okay, but over here when Shmuel said three, he was ballparking it. He was just giving a rough estimate, right? A whole number that people can understand really easily. And behind the chumer lo dak, the amar of hun, amar shmo, halachik Rabbi Tarfon. And now, yes, he's estimating, but he's moving up. Meaning the actual halacha demands that the hadas on the rava only be 2.5. And when he's announcing to people how long it has to be, he says 3. Okay, good. So if they fall short of 3, they're still within the realm of having kasher hadasim and aravos. And the same thing is going to be true regarding a lulav as well. Okay. So this is where the Gemara ends off with in terms of having a statement to Rabbi Tarfon regarding the length of the Hadassim and the Ravos, where he says, Ama Bas Chamisha, really unclear what he meant. The Gemara went through three rounds of what he meant by it. Either number one, he meant that the Hadassim and the Rav have to be five tefachim long, which the Gemara says impossible, meaning we just simply can't find them that long. We struggle with three, and now you want five. The Gemara offered a second shot, which is that he really meant to take a six tefach amma, break it into five parts, which means now that you have longer measurements of an amma and a fifth, and take three of those units, which gets to 3 3/5. Okay, the Gemara says that, but that's problematic because Shmuel said you only need three, and meanwhile the halacha demands 3 3/5. And to say that he was approximating, you don't approximate down. And then finally, the third round of understanding of Rabbi Tarfon is that actually you're going to be taking five tefachim and you're going to be breaking that into six parts and you're going to take three of those units. Otherwise stated, you're going to need 2.5 tefachim in order to get a kasher hadas and a rava and an additional tefach for the lulav. And when Shmuel said that the halacha is like Rabbi Tarfon, great. And when Shmuel says that you need three, he was just approximating upward, which is fine, because he was giving a round number, and he was being machmir and giving that round number. Perfect. Okay. Adkan, that's going to take us to the end of the daf today. Tomorrow, we'll start fresh. We'll start with a hadasim tomorrow. The way the daf Yomi is organized, it's really wonderful. Meaning tomorrow's daf is hadasim. The following daf, we're going to be doing a ravos. Then the following daf, we're going to be doing an esrog. Okay, so it comes out. That every day is going to be a new one for the Dominum. Let's quickly review. Let's recap our day today. Today, we opened up with Niktam Rosho, the head of the lulav being clipped off. Mishra says it's pasul. And the Gemara goes through a series of specific disqualifications as it relates to the lulav. The opening statement of today's daf is that Rav Huna says is that if it is nistak, if they're split on the top, so that's fine, that's acceptable, that's kosher. The Brisa goes against the statement of Rav Huna. The Brisa says that Saduk, in addition to a number of other deformities within the lulav, is going to be pasul. So the Gemara says, you misunderstood. The Braisa was talking about where it's Asa Kehemnik, where the split on the top of the lulav is so pronounced that it looks like there are twin peaks to the lulav, and that's where the Braisa says it is no good. Rav Huna was just simply describing where it spread out a little bit. Again, as I pointed out in the beginning of Shir, but I'd like to reiterate in a summary, just in other words, you need a Rav. You need somebody who is really competent and knows the halachas in order to be able to practically put into terms this distinction that the Gemara just made. We quickly discussed a bend in the lulav. Various bends are puzzle, so one bend would be kosher. A bend on its spine would be fine. A bend forward would be no good. To the sides, the Gemara has two versions as to whether it's good or no good. If leaves are only coming out of one side of the lulav, the Gemara says that it's such a deformity, it would be pasul. Nifritzu alav, if the leaves are detached, the way Rashi described it, if the leaves are fully detached and reattached by string, like a broom, so that's pasul. But if they're spread out, it would be kosher. According to Rav Yehuda, you should still wind it back up again. Tie it back up again. The Gemara spends a little bit of time in the Amud Aleph today going over other possibilities of what the lulav may be, or what part of the palm tree we're describing when the Torah says that you must take a lulav. And as I discussed from a more meta standpoint of the Gemara, how seriously was the Gemara actually entertaining using either other species or other parts of the palm tree? Anyway, but the Gemara concludes that no, the leaf that we use, the palm leaf that we use, that's in fact the correct version. The Gemara goes over exactly what Sinei Har Barza is, what it is, and where you can find it. Okay, interesting Gemara, which obviously needs a lot more explanation. The shear of the lulav is where we finished off the daf today on the Amud Beis. How long does the Hadassim and the Ravas have to be? Answers 3 tefachim. How long does the lulav have to be? Answers 4 tefachim. Unclear. The 4 tefachim is measuring up to the tip of the spine or up to the tip of the leaves. The Gemara presents two versions on this. And then finally, Rabbi Tarfon has a modified version of how to measure the Hadassim and the Aravos and how to measure the Lulav. What exactly Rabbi Tarfon meant was unclear. The Gemara had 3 rounds of how to understand Rabbi Tarfon. Ultimately, the Gemara's conclusion is that Rabbi Tarfon actually meant that the Hadassim and the Aravos need to be 2.5 tefachim. And then the Lulav has to be an additional tefach above that. But Shmuel said that has to be 3 tefachim. He just rounded up, and he just was simply being more machmir in rounding upwards. Adkan.